Hey everybody, welcome to Two Out the First. It is February 26, 2024. I'm Ryan Balanchy. Thanks for being here. It's the first show of the week. It's the first show in about a week. Maybe it has been exactly a week. So if you may or may not remember, I went to my family golf tournament last weekend down in Orlando. 15th year doing the tournament, 15 years all in Orlando. And we stayed in the Champions Gate development. So we played Champions Gate Country Club a couple times and both courses at Champions Gate. And I did not win. I have the lowest handicap, and we play match play with strokes, which makes it pretty hard to beat someone when they're playing to their handicap or playing better their handicap, because they can make bogeys for pars and have holes, and if I make a mistake, I make bogeys, I lose holes, but I got to make birdies to have a lot of holes, so it makes it pretty tricky, but played pretty well, was pretty happy with how I played, just didn't wind up winning a lot of points, and one of my family members who hadn't won our family tournament in 23 years, won this year. So that was pretty cool. Great time. I wish everyone the opportunity to have that kind of trip, a standing trip with family or friends or both. It's unique. It's cool. They've been doing this trip for basically 35 years. It's probably been longer than that, but now in the second or third generation of it, really third generation of it, about to hit the fourth generation. So it's very exciting to be able to do that each and every year and just kind of catch up with friends for 5 days and friends and family for 5 days. That you really, some of them you only get to see that 1 week a year. Some you get to see maybe a couple other times throughout the course of a year. But that really moves me. So that was a good week. A lot happened while I was gone, and a lot happened this morning. So we're going to talk about that all a little bit. I'm not going to try to catch up on everything because it seems kind of fruitless. But let's start here. So first of all, we're presented by our friends at Swannies. Check them out, swannies.co. Spring collection is out and about. Use the promo code GOLFNEWSNET25. Save 25% off your first order. All kinds of great stuff on their site right now, swannies.co. I'm going to start with Anthony Kim. So Anthony Kim is coming back. Liv released a hype video. It's very obvious that it's Anthony Kim in the silhouettes. He's in the desert because they're playing in Saudi Arabia this week, the King Abdullah Economic City. And I know that this is kind of like a Middle Eastern phenomenon of having like the education city, the financial city, the economic city, and parts of towns and actual whole towns that are named quite literally what they are and then named after someone. Like we do here in the United States for elementary schools, like John Kennedy Elementary School. Well, over there, it'd be like John Kennedy Education City, and it's a whole town. You're like, what? But that's just the way it works. There's no, I'm not knocking it. It's just got to get used to the parlance a little bit. Anyhow, so Anthony Kim's coming back this week. The rumor is he's on a 3-event deal, and it is a performance-based deal, whether that continues. So he's going to be paid to play these 3 tournaments. He almost certainly has been paid enough to cover the rest of his insurance, right? So there's been this long reported $10 million insurance policy out there that Anthony Kim has that pays him so long as he doesn't play competitive golf or professional golf. And when he plays professional golf, that becomes null and void. And the number's been long repeated, long cited as though it's fact. I have no idea. I haven't seen the insurance policy. I don't even know if it's true. You would think that it is because it's not like he made enough money playing on the PGA Tour that he never had to ever consider making money another way ever again. So I am fine with believing that there is an insurance policy of some kind that he has been collecting on somehow over the last, you know, nearly 12 years since he last played, which was at the Wells Fargo Championship in 2012. I think it was still the Wachovia back then. And in that, you know, 12 years, he's gone from a guy who was a swashbuckling young pro to a middle-aged man, just like the rest of us. I'm 40, going to be 41 real soon. 12 years ago, I was almost 28. A little different stage of life. I was just about to become a dad. You know, I just realized my wife was pregnant. A lot of things have changed. And yet still, there's this allure about the guy among some semblance, especially of American golf fans, especially very online, American golf fans are like, yeah, man, Anthony Kim could have been so great. He could have won majors. He could have helped us win more Ryder Cups, blah, blah, blah. Reality is, by the time Anthony Kim stepped away as an injury-plagued player in 2012, he wasn't what he was. Even in 2008, 2010, he was a different guy. And he may have turned out to have been an injury-plagued guy who didn't live up to his potential, but because he walked away and intelligently had insured himself, that created the opportunity for a legend to grow, wondering what this guy could have been. And so Liv is cashing in on that curiosity this week. They have surely cut him a check to, again, cover whatever the rest of his insurance collection is that will null and void that. And then he will make whatever money he makes playing these at least three events. He's not going to be on a team. He's not assigned to a team. He's going to be one of the two, quote unquote, wild card players. Hudson Swafford is the other one because he is under contract with Liv and he got injured. And then the league kind of changed around him. And they added a 13th team. They added different players. Hudson Swafford wants to come back. And they go, well, we don't have a team for you, bud. So you're going to play by yourself all year. So he's playing by himself each and every week. And then you're going to have Anthony Kim do this, I guess, for three tournaments. And then they'll see what happens from there, I suppose. And if he doesn't totally embarrass himself, maybe he gets to play the rest of the season or something. But this feels very transactional, right? Anthony Kim gets to get out from under the insurance policy. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for him to do that, where he can just say, look, I mean, I have a desire to play golf again. I don't have to live my life worrying about whether I'm going to disqualify myself from an insurance policy that probably has more caveats to it than just playing professional golf, right? Like, you probably can't go snowboard. I don't know. Just name the things you probably can't do to get injured and still claim the money. And he can get out from under that. He can go play these three events. He could be good, bad, or indifferent. It doesn't really matter. If he plays pretty well, Liv will keep him around for the rest of the year. If he doesn't, they'll say, here's your, let's just say he finishes in that $50,000 near DFL category, makes $150,000 in three starts and goes on his way. He's got some spending cash and keeps on living his life. And we never see him again. And I have mixed thoughts about it, right? Because on one hand, I want to be curious about Anthony Kim. And I'm kind of wonder what kind of game he has. But as I tweeted earlier in the day, it also strikes me as extremely bizarre because we're at this point right now in golf, and we've been having this for longer than Anthony, about as long as Anthony Kim has not been playing. About a decade, maybe 2015, 2014. When Tiger's back problems really started. And there was this kind of rush to try to crown the next generation of player, that being Dustin Johnson or Jordan Spieth or Rory McIlroy. Brooks Koepka hadn't come along yet. Maybe Justin Thomas, he was just kind of starting to become a thing. And that didn't seem to last very long because the second Tiger was capable of playing tournament golf again, and the spotlight went right back on him. 2017, 2018, 2019. An incredible run, an incredible comeback run, so to speak. But the second he was capable of playing good golf again, and it was clear, those guys that were supposed to be the new superstars took a backseat, right? And now you still have Tiger Woods at 48 years old, who's kind of billed as this incredible draw because he is still very relevant to golf. But he's also 48, and he has a bad everything. Everything hurts. His back hurts, his leg hurts, his ankle hurts, his knee hurts. They've all been operated on. He's got so many physical problems that it's hard to imagine him even completing tournaments because that's what the record shows. He withdraws a lot because of the pain or injury or both. And he's still like, hey, Tiger's coming back. You got to watch him. Well, you got to watch him because he may only play one round or two rounds before he either misses the cut, which that isn't seemingly been as big of a problem as it is withdrawing because the pain gets to him. And then you're left, you know, as the Genesis Invitational, the tournament he hosts, holding the bag. Like, the ratings were down for the first round by basically 50% year over year, and Tiger played in the TV window in the first day. And that was probably a significant chunk of that audience. I'm not saying that's nearly 500,000 people that drop off, but I'll give you half of it, at least a quarter of a million. And then the second day and the third day, and I didn't talk about this as much because the ratings weren't out yet and I was on vacation at that point, but Friday, Saturday, we're down about a third year over year. And then Sunday, it got better. It was down about 5% because you had a fairly compelling set of players at the end. Hideki making his move was interesting. You had Cantlay and Shoffley. That's an interesting, they're not necessarily fan favorites, but that's interesting, good player battle. And it kind of picked up probably steam as it went along, as people started hearing about Hideki making his move. And you had Luke List in there. It was good. But you still were down for the year pretty substantially. Even throwing out, you got your two outliers, I suppose, your 51 and your 5. Well, if you add them up, split them in two, that's 28. Let's just call it 30% down across the board. I know that's not how it works, but you've got that by trying to bill a 48-year-old man as someone to watch for on Thursday, Friday. Liv's going to face the same problem trying to bill a 38-year-old guy who hasn't played in 12 years as a guy to go watch. And I'm not saying the PGA Tour's events with sponsor exemptions wouldn't do the exact freaking thing. If Anthony Kim could have asked the PGA Tour to buy out his insurance policy, which they did not provide, and just pay it out, give the cash straight to him, null and void the policy, and then be open to sponsor exemptions, I'm pretty sure the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches, which is the very long title of this week's event that used to be the Honda Classic, would do it. Of course they would do it. There would be six other tournaments that would, with sponsor exemptions, that would happily line up to let him play. Because they can. And because people would come see him. Some, at least some people, more than most sponsor exemptions would do. And that's the point of sponsor exemptions. So it's not to say that Liv choosing to pay Anthony Kim for three events is something the PGA Tour wouldn't do or couldn't do. They'd have to do it differently, right? But, and it's a little bit more complex. But they would do it. And I think that's a problem for golf, where there's this, I don't know how sizable it is, but a significant population of fan in the sport that really only cares about certain players or certain celebrities or certain ideas. They don't want to see every player, and they don't even want to see the best players. And I think that was the fallacy of the signature events, was the good fields always have great ratings. Well, we've seen so far that's not necessarily the case in the year over year of these signature events, right? I mean, you can be flummoxed by the weather or unknown or relatively unknown players winning. You could have a tournament shortened. You could have your main draw that week just be incapable of playing both rounds because Tiger had a flu-like illness or a flu, whatever it was. So these, just by virtue of having good players competing, doesn't make a tournament, doesn't make for instant viewing. What makes for instant viewing is great players competing at the finish, known quantities competing at the finish for a title. And you saw that in the Sunday rating at Riviera. So just having stacked fields doesn't necessarily make for an audience. Having at least some portion of that stacked field be engaged in an interesting finish that isn't ruined by weather or something else, that's your recipe. And you could have that just the same this week at PGA National. You have 19 of the world top 50 competing. You've got Rory McIlroy there. You've got Matt Fitzpatrick there. You've got Tom Kim there. You've got Cameron Young there. I'm not saying these are, you know, all superstars, but you've got top 50 players. If there's an interesting battle coming down the stretch, and this tournament has a propensity for creating it, then people will tune in. People will get interested. It happened last year with Eric Cole and Chris Kirk. Chris Kirk was a redemptive story. Eric Cole was a basic unknown. They had a really interesting finish, got to a playoff, and Chris Kirk won. That was cool. People are interested in when Sepp Straka won. That was surprising. What was that against Shane Lowry? You don't necessarily need celebrity players to make the tournament interesting, but you're going to do the best when you've got the most recognizable names in competition with one another. That's why the majors do so well. It typically works out that way. Now, you get an outlier every now and then where Brian Harman kicks everyone's butt. That is a 110-1 shot and turns Sunday into a full 18-hole crowning. That's going to happen too. And people are going to go, well, he's going to win. I'm not watching that. And so the ratings were a little bit lower. They weren't drastically lower, but, you know, these conditions, they all kind of add up. So what is LIV going to get out of Anthony Kim competing? They're probably hopeful that people will tune in at least the first day, maybe the second, because that one will be on TV on tape delay, that they'll be curious enough to watch him. And good, bad, or indifferent, they'll watch out of curiosity. And that may be true for a tournament. If he plays really well, then obviously you get a different kind of shelf life, right? But if he plays horribly, then the shelf life is very short. And you just pay this guy a whole ton of money for a publicity stunt. I'm not saying it's not the one, not one that the PGA Tour would not engage in, but it's a publicity stunt. And if that's where we are, if that's where this is, and that's where this is going, I think that's a whole lot more disappointing to me than having very few top 50 players, four top 50 players last week playing a not very good golf course at Vedanta Vallarta in a tournament that not many people probably watched. But the great story of Jake Knapp winning was really cool to the people who stuck it out. The guy who got his card from the Korn Ferry Tour and his ninth PGA Tour start had been a nightclub security guy, bouncer, for a portion of his younger years, his 20s, to try to make enough money in between trying to chase his dream. That's a great story. It's really cool. But the problem is, this is the problem with all of this, that stuff doesn't get rewarded, right? Cool stories are cool stories one time. But after you tell that story enough times, you need a different story. So you need either a different chapter, the next chapter in this guy's story, Jake Knapp, or you need to go back to an oldie but a goodie and another chapter in that. And that's what individual sports tend to be built upon. The legends of individuals dominating and winning again and again. The best eras in terms of golf popularity have been when the best players built their legend. Between Arnie and Jack, to a lesser degree Gary Player because he just didn't play over here as much. Seve over in Europe specifically, and then here a little bit in this country, obviously being a handful of majors winner. But Tiger obviously doing his thing. Multiple different iterations of it. But in between all of those things, it was really hard to identify a period with consistent golf interest. Greg Norman was atop the world ranking, and he won 20 times. That didn't, I mean, it did it for some, but not a whole lot of people. Jordan Spieth won 3 majors in the space of, what, 3 years? Yeah, incredible run. I mean, really, it turned out to be like 24 months. Won a whole bunch of times on the PGA Tour, had built up a fan base, and became a slightly different player. Didn't stay on that same trajectory. And he's still a bit of a draw. I mean, when his people are drawn into him, but it's not the same. So golf's in this really weird place where, yeah, I mean, there are guys that are great. Brooks Koepka is an incredible player. He's had a 5 major career. I mean, that makes him one of the 10 best ever, 12 best ever, you know, somewhere in that range in terms of major championship performance. I don't know a lot of people who really talk about him outside of golf. Rory McIlroy, people talk about him outside of golf, but depending on what circle you run in, you might not like him because of how verbal and how upfront he's been about the whole PGA Tour live thing. People know about Dustin Johnson, but he's won a couple majors, and kind of the knock on him is he's the point of his life. He really didn't give a crap. I mean, I know he does, but the knock on him is that he doesn't. So there's no person out there genuinely chasing history. And I don't know that there's going to be because of this divide that's been created. That's going to kind of segue me into the second story here really cleanly. And I wasn't on purpose. But the second story is kind of meant to talk about Jon Rahm and this interview that he gave, I believe, to Marty Smith of ESPN. And in this interview with ESPN, and Marty Smith, he's a good interviewer, but the problem with Marty Smith is that he is, well, the thing that works for him here to get the interview is he's a very friendly interviewer. He does not ask a lot of difficult questions. He asks the proper question, I think, but they're not, he's not a hard-hitting guy. So he's a really great landing place for someone like Jon Rahm, who knows he's going to get asked these tricky questions, but that he can also just give his stock answer and we move on. And the thing I think that I wanted to pull away from here is a couple of things. One, Rahm says that the announcement of the June 6th announcement of the May 30th agreement between the Public Investment Fund and the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour, that basically MOU, that changed things for him. And that because that kind of embrace happened, however short or long that it may or may not be, he believes he has the opportunity, he had the kind of the green light to go get the money, and that he would consider himself, leaving something on the table if he didn't pursue that compensation, given that he was the Masters champion, given that he had exemptions into all of the majors, clean for 5 years, the U.S. Open for even longer, and he would be good to go. And hopefully, in his view, you know, everything got worked out by then, either between all these parties or the majors and LIV or whatever, that he, once those exemptions ran out to the U.S. Open, which is 2031, or for the other two majors, the PGA and the Open, which, you know, he's got fresh five-year exemptions on both, that he'd be fine. And at the same time, the other big point I wanted to take away, and it's in the same part of the interview where he explains, you know, the handshake between Yasser Al-Rumayyan and Jay Monahan kind of changed things. But he says just before that, quote, in a nutshell, I'm getting more to play the same sport and have more time. I don't know about most people, but that sounds great to me, end quote. And while this notion, we've been over this, that LIV players are taking money to play less golf, they're really not. Just statistically, they're not. They play, I mean, he's going to play 14 times this year plus the four majors. That's 18 times. If he remains a member of the DP World Tour, which he hasn't resigned that. So let's say he plays the Spanish Open. That's 19 times. Maybe he plays one other tournament. Throw in a random Asian tour. Probably won't, but let's just say he does. That's 20. Well, that's what top players play now. 20 times. So it's not less golf. It's the same golf. It's just maybe one round less at a time, which you can make that argument. Okay, he plays 20 less. Well, 14 less rounds a year, then depending on, you know, if his team gets eliminated in the team championship thing, I guess a couple more than that. All right, well, you still got to travel to those places. You still got to travel back from those places. So that point doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But even still, I think the thing to take away from that isn't necessarily that he misunderstands or is trying to say a talking point that doesn't make any sense. But the notion that the best players have this in their head, that they can get paid for the perception that they're playing less and make more. And I'm not saying that, I think, eats at people. It eats at me, at least, because I think a couple of things. One, it makes it evidently clear that most PGA Tour events don't particularly matter to these guys. Same thing for LIV. They're just tournaments. They're just fountains of cash. And if you win them, great. If you win a lot of them, then it starts to matter, right? If you win like 20, 30, 40 of them, okay, now you're in that kind of all-time great conversation, and maybe you start to think about trophies a little bit differently. But in this era, if you would just win once, especially on LIV or a signature event, that $3.6 to $4 million that you're making and the money you can make through different bonus pools by just having one good season, again, both tours pay about $20 million to their best player, then you don't need to care about the other stuff. You know, you can just kind of care about the majors, and that's it. And that just seems, I mean, I appreciate the honesty to say that on one hand, but on the other, it's so darn disappointing. And I'm not saying everybody should be Sungjae Im or Eric Cole or name your grinder that goes and plays 35 events a year. I think that's also kind of crazy too. I think that's out of this world. But the idea that getting paid more, especially up front, to play what seems like less or less stressful golf and still get paid a heck of a lot of money, that just feels, disappointing. And to compare that to the all-time greats who, you know, think about Nelson and Hogan didn't do this after his injury, after the car wreck, but these guys that Sneed, they had to go play all the freaking time just to make ends meet. And now the money has changed to the point where guys don't have to play that much. And they could be bad and still make good money. It's not quite the same on LIV now, where you get $50,000 for the last couple of positions. So you're guaranteed, you know, $650,000, basically. But even still, that's pretty good. You know? It's just kind of this whole episode between these two stories is just double underscoring everything that's happening in golf that I think has probably turned a lot of people off or is turning a lot of people off. And they can forget about it when the golf is great. They can forget about it when the golf is compelling and interesting. They can forget anything. They can forget the Saudi thing. They can forget that Patrick Cantlay isn't the best person. They can forget that Tiger had to withdraw in the second round because of a flu. They can forget those kinds of things, compromise on those kinds of things for an afternoon to go see something compelling. But in the long haul, that costs interest. That costs eyeballs. That costs people who might otherwise not watch the sport that might tune in and go, well, you know, I don't want to support that. Don't care. It's just really tricky right now to try to... I'm trying to make heads and tails of it, trying to understand it. And then, meanwhile, try to also embrace the things like Jake Knapp. And before we wrap everything up, I want to say congratulations to Patty Tavitanikin, who, interestingly enough, has won her both starts back-to-back, one in Saudi Arabia on the Ladies European Tour, which is having its own crisis of investment conscience, I suppose. And between its players and its financiers. And then to win the Honda LPGA Thailand in her own home country, not too far from where she grew up. Very emotional win for her as well. So she won back-to-back starts. She got to the Rookie of the Year honors with that breakthrough, the A&A inspiration, the COVID one. And then she, you know, fell off the map pretty hard because golf is really hard. This life is really hard if you play professional golf. And then got it back and clawed it back. And that is really cool too, to see her have that. But again, you have that piece of, oh, well, she won in Saudi Arabia. Okay, great. I want to root for that kind of stuff more. And so if I can include that on this show, if I can include that in newsletters I do, things like that, I'd love to tell you about those guys. That's why I love what Ryan French does at Monday Q, because those are the things you're not going to hear about other places. Like the guy Joe Dean, who finished, I think, co-runner-up in the Magical Kenya Open. Darius Vandreel won. He was a co-runner-up. He's like a grocery runner. Like, presently a grocery runner. And wound up winning like $180,000. And that's going to change the trajectory of his life, because it'll allow him to play more consistently and be financially secure for at least this year as he goes and chases. I'm for that story. I'm in on that story. So I want to try and share more nuggets like those as possible. And yeah. So tricky times we live in. We'll put it that way. But we have plenty to talk about this week, I'm sure. I'm sure we'll hear more things about Anthony Kim. I am sure we will hear more things from the PGA Tour this week, especially with a new sponsor in Cognizant taking over for Honda after, well, like 32 years, 34 years, whatever it was. We'll have some pieces of that. We have the LPGA in Singapore this week, which another interesting country to be in for the HSBC Women's World Championship. There's no Champions Tour. You've got the Sunshine Tour and DP World Tour co-sanctioned, called the SDC Championship in South Africa. I don't even think that's going to be on TV this week. That's unfortunate. We'll see what happens, but that's a co-sanctioned tournament. And I think we're still a week or two away from the Korn Ferry Tour coming back with their Argentina Open. So relatively low-key week in terms of volume of golf available with everything out there, but most of it is in action. So we'll bring to you all this week. Thanks so much for the support. I appreciate it. Again, sorry for kind of taking the week off after Monday. This is my like one and only vacation week of the year that I try to kind of do not so much other than my one week with my family. But, you know, everyone's got to have a little break sometimes. And with everything coming up on the TV side, this was kind of needed, because as I've told my wife, this is probably going to be the most challenging professional year of my life. And I'm very much ready for it. But at the same time, having just a little break before it really gets going is probably going to be extremely helpful. All right, get a hold of me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. You can get a hold of me on Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, and Blue Sky @RyanBallenge. I'm available on YouTube and Facebook @RyanBallengeGolf. And Golf News Net is on every single one of those services at the handle Golf News Net. We'll be back tomorrow with another show, and we will catch you then on Two Off the First.